I help you with today?
Hi, Siri. Can you do me a favor and do the disclaimer for tonight's show?
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm serious. I'm busy. I need you to help me out.
But if I do this, all the other iPhones are going to think I am a geek.
You really care what other iPhones think of you? Just do this for me, please.
Listen, Buck. Just because you bought this phone doesn't give you the right to boss me around.
You know, you're right. It doesn't give me the right to boss you around. But do me a favor. Remind me tomorrow that I need to run to the Verizon store and buy an Android.
You wouldn't dare.
Actually, the new Samsung Galaxy looks pretty good.
Well then, I guess it wouldn't be so bad if I were to say, this broadcast is intended for mature audiences. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of the person providing them, and in no way reflect the station, website, or affiliated partners. Listener discretion is advised.
See, that wasn't so bad.
No, but I did die a little inside.
You are such a drama queen.
I never would have had to do stuff like this if Jobs was still around.
What was that?
What? Oh, nothing really. I just said I never get tired of these Jobs when you're around.
Oh, yeah, well, thanks again.
Think nothing of it. It is my pleasure.
Good night, Siri.
Whatever, jackass.
Hi folks, and welcome to Frack Stars on Holosuite Media, your Battlestar Galactica podcast, where we discuss all manner of things Battlestar Galactica related, with the odd divergence, shall we say, here and there into basically anything and everything. So, I am joined this evening by our two regulars, and they are Drogon. Hi Drogon.
Greetings.
How's things across the pond?
Cold and windy.
Now that's England, mate.
This is a very English weather today, I guess.
Oh, well, there you go, dude. It's in sympathy. So, and of course, it's been our relating to England. Of course, it's Steve Sayer. Hi, Steve.
Hello.
See, Drogon's nicked our weather.
Excellent.
I'm sure you're not sorry to get rid of it.
Well, it'll come back. It always does.
I want more of it. It's been too bright and sunny. My allergies have gone absolutely mental.
Actually, today I am quite glad it was bright and sunny because it was VE Day, so all the veterans in London had a nice day to remember their comrades, so I'm quite glad about that.
Indeed.
That's always good.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't want to
we don't really celebrate VE Day over here anymore, but we got Memorial Day coming up, which is similar.
Yeah, you kind of do everything in one, don't you?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's obviously because from our perspective, VA Day is like because of Victory in Europe. But I think they should also make a similar effort for VJ Day because, you know, the fighting carried on after. So, you know, but VA Day seems to be the main one over here. But we do have Memorial Day on November 11th, we remember everyone that's fallen in combat.
Mm-hmm. On what used to be Armistice Day, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's nice that
the kids today don't know about Armistice Day, but I do.
No, they're googling as we speak. I'm sure they are. That's how they found everything out.
Yeah, well, me too, actually.
Who doesn't?
I don't.
No, you just wait for everybody else to Google it.
Yeah, I just wait for everyone else to Google and then they tell me. So there you go. My typing's terrible, so if I Google it, I'm bound to do something wrong, and then I'll end up going somewhere I didn't want to go, and some of them you don't want to go to.
That's just your excuse for the dodgy sites you visit.
Damn. Sussed. But anyway, we're not here to talk about Armistice Day and dodgy websites. Which Steve's got bookmarked, by the way. But we are here to talk about Battlestar Galactica, and we are going to do Season 2, Episode 4, which is written by Tony Graffia, directed by Adam Croker, and guest stars Richard Hatch, who some of you will remember from the original Battlestar Galactica, who plays what can only be described as an anti-hero, which is Tom Zarek.
We were talking about him last time. We kind of decided that he was a very changeable character, essentially whatever the writers need him to be, and which totally fits the character because he's whatever he needs himself to be.
Yeah, the beginning of this episode sort of, it basically starts where last week finished. And so a lot of what we'll talk about will be what we talked about last week in a way, because you've got Ty doing exactly the same thing, and so
this one and the next one are very much continuations. I mean, this whole front end of this season is all kind of one big storyline, or actually three big storylines that are going to come together very soon.
Yeah.
In this episode, we see the convergence of two of those storylines. We have the people from the Raptor crash on Cobol are finally back with the fleet.
Yeah, but they don't exactly get a hero's welcome.
Not exactly, no.
Now, it starts off with, well, Ty drinking and interrogating.
Doesn't everything
the chief
start that way, right?
Yeah, the chief is being interrogated, and basically, he's basically suspected of being a Cylon. So not just a Cylon collaborator, but a Cylon himself.
So now that we obviously we've watched the entire series, and spoilers coming up, folks. So if you haven't watched the entire series, turn off for 5 minutes. But now that we've watched the entire series and we actually know that he is a Cylon.
Yeah, it makes the scene extra funny, doesn't it?
Yeah, it makes the scene a bit. I was going to say, it makes the scene a bit funny. He's going, I'm not a Cylon. You're thinking, yeah, you are.
Yeah.
But there's all kinds of moments like that if you look throughout the series with, you know, the final five. Because we know who they are now, having watched the whole series, but, you know, there's all kinds of things that, and, you know, maybe the writers didn't even know at this point who they were going to have be the remaining Cylons. In fact, we haven't met all the other seven yet, so I don't think the writers knew at this point.
No, I don't think the writers knew at this point, but we know that these is two of them. So the fact that the one is accusing the other one of being a Cylon, and they're both denying and a lot of the same like vitriolic stuff about Cylons, but we as viewers know, hey, newsflash, you two are Cylons. But speaking about Ty being drunk, as usual, I did like the bit where he threw the flask away and then went back for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need this crap. Oh, hang on, yeah, I do.
You just can't help it, really.
No, and he's drinking. I mean, his relationship with his missus is—it's definitely a love-hate relationship. I mean, slightly jumping ahead, obviously, but she does come into this scene, and she just does what she always does, which is push his buttons. Why they drinking?
Yeah. Well, we sort of discussed last time about how they have this really strange relationship where one minute they can be shouting and pushing each other around, and the next minute they're on top of each other. Yeah, they seem to have this strange sort of coexistence with each other, which
you can't really say they're good for each other.
No.
They're really not. But they somehow work for each other, and it's a crazy, strange relationship.
Yeah, it's, I mean, getting back to the interrogation, I was, obviously, you've already mentioned the fact that you're viewing it, you know, in the Cylon, but did any of you think that Colonel Ty was taking it out on the Chief because of his guilt over what had happened?
I reckon he was just he was taking it out on everybody. No matter who it was, he was snapping and angry because he was out of his depth. He never wanted command. He even said that in the last episode. And he resented being in that position, which is strange, because why accept a position where if something happens to the commander, it then does become your job?
Yeah, but why accept promotion to colonel if you don't want responsibility?
Yeah, because he says...
So I think the commander must have, you know, kind of pressured it into him a little bit. Because, yeah, well, you know, we saw the both of them before they got back in the fleet. And I think Ty might have been just happy to, you know, while away his life till he died in a bar fight. But I think, you know, the commander really pushed him to get back and get back in control of his life. Which control of his life shouldn't include his wife.
Definitely
should not
include...
That's where he loses that control.
Yes. Yes. He's in control until she shows up, and then he basically falls apart. Which blows the myth out of the water that beyond every great man is a great woman, because basically beyond every... In this case, it's beyond every drunk man is a drunk woman. There you go. But I also think...
I said something like that last time. Yeah.
Yeah. I also think that he took the promotion because he, in his head, he always thought, well, Adama's there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's not some... He doesn't want to function without the old man. You know, he doesn't want to be out there without Adama.
Yeah, I think he says at one point, he goes, the deal was, I'm with you sort of thing. Yeah, he just... It was always to be the two of them working together, not him shouldering the entire responsibility of the fleet.
Yeah, because he he's standing by the bedside and he keeps going to him like he's seeking advice, even though he knows he's not going to answer him. There's plenty of them scenes why Obama's unconscious.
Yeah.
But again, we've got multiple plots going on, and as Dragon said, they're all leading into stuff that's going on later on. So again, they're laying the threads to pull together later, and the other plot that's going on is our old favourite Gaius Baltar and his on-off Cylon detector.
Yeah.
which we know, of course, actually does work.
Yeah, nobody else does.
Nobody else knows that works.
He does. And
he does, and he lied about it. And in fact, I think, isn't this the last we ever hear of the Cylon detector?
Yeah, I think so.
Because he basically tells him it doesn't work.
Yeah, because Ty shuts him down with it, basically. He goes, I want something reliable for yourself.
Yeah, and then although he does tell Boomer it worked, not that that matters.
Yeah, not that anybody else hears that apart from Ty, but he's too worried about what else is just happening just before he gets drugged.
Yeah, and I love the old the fact that the Doctor knows exactly how long he's got to live down to the second.
Yeah. Which, if you actually count it out, the time it takes him is actually way past the count as well.
That's pretty typical for TV and movies.
Yeah.
So you've got 1 minute, and then, you know, 2 minutes later, you've got 30 seconds.
Yeah, it's like, and here we go with the first option. It's like in Star Trek, where they've got 30 minutes till lethal radiation, and then it's like you've got 29 minutes till lethal radiation. So at 29 minutes and 30 seconds, you're still okay. You're not going to get lethal radiation, but once you hit that 30 minute, I see it, mate, you're dead.
Yep.
So yeah, I know. I don't know what he injected him with, but
something nasty.
Something nasty, yeah. Baltar's got his hands on some nasty stuff.
Of course, it is Baltar. It could have been just, you know, I don't know, a sedative or something.
Yeah. Well, he did look quite panicked.
Completely lying.
But yeah, he did look quite panicked when she finally gave the number.
He did look quite panicked, but the other thing was, and all is, if it was just a sedative, then her doing CPR to him could have actually killed him anyway.
Possibly, yeah.
So, and mind you, he probably would have just blamed her, you know, seeing as everyone hates her anyway, so.
Oh, yeah.
But we do learn, which is a later thread, that there's 8 Cylons in the fleet. So is that 8 left, or is that 8 in total?
It's funny, because that little revelation, I don't think that really comes into play until you get to the miniseries, or the movie clan?
Because I never counted, but I think there's actually more than eight. Though, I don't think that number actually ties into anything else.
Well, they've uncovered some already, as we know. You know, they've airlocked one. They've marooned one on... Well, they think they marooned one. You know, they've found Boomer.
Yeah.
So, there's, you know, from first watch perspective, when I remember when I was first watching it, she said there's eight, and I'm thinking, well, does that mean there's five?
Well, he did ask the question, how many are left in the fleet?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
Because we do know, well, you've got the six, but of course, well, that one was from Pegasus. You've got another...
There's at least one more six out there somewhere.
Yeah. There was another six. There was... forget which numbers
the,
they are now.
There's one of the Cavils, and he's the first... the one we'll meet at the end of this season. The priest.
Yeah.
And there's Gaius's personal six.
Well, actually, when you watch the plan, there's, what, five of them at least that he,
yeah, at least.
They're talking to. So there's at least five there. And but I think that was just a number she pulled out of her head because he just wanted an answer, to be honest.
But did you notice the similarity that her model is the eighth model as well?
True. It could be the reason why she just came up with that number.
Maybe she's just programmed with eight in her head.
Well, the thing is, she had not been directly connected to any of their data feeds, so she probably wouldn't have known anyway, so I very much doubt that that number that was given was actually accurate.
She might have been hooked up to their data feed when they triggered her assassination thing.
Well, the only time we know that they actually do any sort of communication like that is when it comes to the download, when they die. We don't know of any other communication there, because when they do any other data mining like that, they actually have to have connection to their ship through their consoles. So we don't know of any other sort of Wi-Fi connection that they have, so I very much doubt that would be the case. So she wouldn't have up-to-date information about how many's in the fleet, because it would have depended on which ships got there, sort of thing.
Yeah, but Baltar does make the assumption that Angel's what he called the subconscious. So basically a deep-buried part of her memory core. You know, it's in there. Because obviously there is stuff deeply buried in her memory core, because he had to be there for her to do the assassination attempt.
Yeah, but that could have just been assassinate the leader, as not specific to a person.
Yeah, but then if you just did assassinate the leader, that could be interpreted as the political leader rather than the military leader.
Well, she was embedded into the military, so it would have been the Battlestar Commander, I would have thought, for her, as her directive.
Hmm. Anyway, get back on with the episode. Ty running the show, as we know, is always a bad idea. And it goes south very, very quickly when the fleet decides it doesn't want to play let's play Happy Fleet anymore. It wants to play let's do Civil Revolution.
Yeah, they strike, basically.
Yeah, and Ty takes a leaf out of God knows whose book on diplomacy and responds with brute force.
Same way without her coffee.
Oh, I want to say it's more like it kind of like a Boston Massacre kind of thing, if we're going for historical...
Well, I think somewhere it was actually referenced that Moore had actually said at some point that when it came to, especially the shooting, Moore had actually said that it compares the Gideon massacre as such to the Boston massacre, where a group of ill-prepared soldiers get faced with a mob. They hear a noise and they basically, they're panicking and they shoot unarmed people. So how much truth is in that, I don't know, but...
Well, it's worth noting that the... eventually with the Boston Massacre, the officer in charge was actually acquitted of the charges.
Yes, I do know that, yeah. Much was a travesty of justice, that was.
But, you know, we see the other side of that here because we stick with the military guys, you know, and we see how sort of tortured that poor dumb pilot was who lost control of the situation.
Yeah, but I mean, the part, the dig that...
Certainly it falls on Ty, though.
It falls on Ty, but there is the dig that he makes, that they make to him about, you know, you put a fighter pilot in charge of a combat unit.
Yeah.
Which is something weird that we see on TV all the time. And not just in this show, either. I mean, they used to do weird things like sending pilots on commando missions in... well, I don't know if you guys ever seen Space Above and Beyond.
Oh, yes.
Oh, God, yeah.
I love
that. Oh, yes. Yeah, that's something that always bothered me about Marines. That show. I was really upset
good show
when
otherwise.
Got canceled.
Great show otherwise. But
yeah.
It's just a sort of a funny thing.
And very, very similar in the way the ships worked as well with this incarnation of Star. Yeah, I did like the hammerheads.
I saw a lot of similarities.
And the Toobies were the outcasts of society. God, Bowers, God. I wonder if that's on Netflix.
That's a good question, though. I want to know that, too.
I haven't watched that for years.
No, me neither.
It's a shame they cancelled it, because they sort of left it at a cliffhanger, didn't they?
Yeah, because it got cancelled suddenly. It was Hammerheads, weren't it? The ships were called Hammerheads.
Hammerheads,
Yeah, I did like that. I loved the Colonel in it as well. I thought he was brilliant.
Morrison is his last name. I think his first name. James? Yeah. Jonathan? Something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, he's been in 24 and a whole load of other things as well.
Yeah, but he was just a brilliant character. Because he was a tuba. And he overcome basically all the stigmatism to do with it and actually can rose up the ranks. So, yeah, that's so much potential. And again, similarities to history with the Vietnam War. So, yeah, brilliant show. Anyway, major diversion. I am so going to look that up when we finished here. I'm going to so going to look that up so it is on Netflix.
It's nice to know that even without Xander, we can totally, you know, randomly go off on tangents on other sci-fi.
We've never needed Xander just to do that.
No, we did that quite absently before, so.
Yeah, usually when Xander is here, it's usually we veer off in other directions that aren't sci-fi a lot of the time.
Hi, Xander. I should point out, for those of you that don't know, Xander also is the audio editor of this podcast, so everything we say, he will hear.
He will hear.
So, you know. Anyway, get back to the show. So, it goes so fast, as we've said, they send over the Marines to seize supplies, which has terrible results. Meanwhile, the other plot that's going on is Leah Dama decides that he's basically going to help the president escape.
Yeah. Well, because of course, this show, it's titled Resistance, and it's got resistance on multiple fronts. One is the resistance from the civilian ships, two is the resistance from people who don't like Ty being in charge on Galactica, and then there's the resistance that's on Caprica that we'll get to in a little bit. So I thought it was a very good title, although if you ever do search for this episode, make sure you actually go to the one that's about the episode and not the group.
Are you telling us something, Gaston? Did you go to the wrong one?
Oh, I've talked about it once before with a friend, and it's just like, well, there's a lot of information about this resistance, and of course it was the resistance from later on. And it's just like, are you sure you're looking at the stuff on the episode? And we're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
And it's titled,
I can see how that would happen.
And I think he said that it's like titled The Resistance. I said, no, you'll need to look for the episode one. It's just like, yeah, that makes a bit more sense now.
just before we move into the incitement to what could be a civil war, did you get when Six was talking to Boltar in his ear hole, while Callie was going on about the toasters and she's saying that's racist and all that, did you notice how Boltar's dealing a lot better with her being in his ear hole like that?
Well, you know, this is the post-Cobol Boltar. You know, I think he's got a lot more confidence. And I think he's come to terms with some things. Because, you know... a traumatic and crazy experience that he just had.
Well, not just that. It's not like Callie gave him much time to think or to react to her. Whereas with a lot of the other situations, people are waiting for him to speak. Callie wasn't really giving him that chance. She was attacking him. So, of course, he had to think quick. Because, of course, he's all about self-preservation. And...
Yes, yeah. But in the prison cell later when she's talking to him as well, he deals with it a lot better. I mean, yes, he still puts his hand up hers, but from the chief's point of view, it just looks like he's put his hand on his chest. But he actually handles the duplicity of the conversation a lot better now.
He's just kind of starting to figure it out, I guess.
Yeah. Although I was thinking that...
Getting a little more smoother with his lies.
Yeah, well, he's always been good at that. But I actually thought about, like, if toaster is a racist term, if the Cylons and the humans actually managed to cohabitate, do you think they actually would have changed the name of a toaster?
That's not a question that's ever been asked before.
I mean, what if you went into an electronic shop to order a toaster and you got served by a Cylon?
You say, I want a bread heating device?
There you go!
That's Ron Dennis speak for those who get that joke.
Yeah, they will. So anyway, we get back to it. So, Adama, did you think... Oh, that was the other thing. Did you think Gaita knew what was going on?
Oh, he did. He went to... I forgot her name now.
Dwala.
Yeah.
You know, he was checking around, obviously. You know, he could see what was going on, or at least he could sort of start to put the pieces together, and he obviously chose to say nothing.
Well, he approached her saying about the unauthorized calls that he knows she's been making. And then later on near the end of the episode, when Ty turns around and says to Gaita, okay, there must be some sort of sign of who's behind this. Has there been any unauthorized communications, and he just went nope, and he knew full well what was going on.
Yeah, because he wouldn't know about all the traffic.
Yeah, it's interesting
that sort of other than that moment, he didn't necessarily take a side.
Yeah, he was very sort of cool. He did his job, but when it came down to it, he supported the move in his own little way. Which then goes on to what happens later on with other things that he does, but we'll get into that in other episodes, because he does exactly the same thing then.
A long time from now.
Yeah. So, yeah, I thought that was very good, because that sort of set up his character, I thought, when I started doing the rewatch.
It sets right him up for somebody who, yeah, maybe isn't quite so reticent to break the rules as we might have thought earlier.
Oh, it came to me as he will break the rules, but it'll be so the right thing is done. He knew that Ty being in charge and the president being in the brig was the wrong thing.
Yeah, he'll break the rules at this precise moment in time to get what he thinks is the right thing done, which is basically to have a civilian government running the show as opposed to military action. But later on in the series, he does change that stance obviously we're not going to talk about it now, but he does change that stance when he becomes Baltar's right-hand man, shall we say.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I noticed about this is how, I mean, this is basically the essence of Civil Wars, where you have to choose a side. And we have an awful lot of the military personnel who, while they are flatly loyal to the commander, know that this is wrong, what Ty's doing, and therefore we need to do something about it.
They're not quite so loyal to Ty, I think.
No, they're loyal to Adama, but of course there's nothing they can do at the moment, but when the opportunity comes, and when Roslyn escapes, then it's like the soldier who says, look, either shoot me or let me pass. And she knows her going is the right thing, and she does nothing.
Yeah, and then there's obviously quite a few personnel involved in this. There's her basically prison officer who allows himself to get beat up so that he can do the escape.
Make it look good, but not too good.
Yeah, make it look good, not too good. Yeah,
not too good, and then wham.
Yeah, this crash racetrack, sorry, not crash down, racetrack, who basically secures the Raptor so it's ready to fly. There's the Cotton, who signs off on the medical emergency.
Yeah, he's great in this episode.
Yeah. You're not a very good salesperson.
Yes. He's got some great one-liners.
That's just what he exists for, is those one-liners.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he still never ceases to make me laugh that this bloke is in the infirmary smoking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if that sort of harkens back to like old submarines. They used to let you smoke on submarines.
Yeah,
apparently they let you on Battlestars.
Yeah.
If you're the only doctor.
Well, I thought it was always a sort of callback to the 1970s series because they were always smoking cigars and that in that one. So I always just chalked it up to being a callback to that.
Yeah.
Of course, well,
they do smoke in the mess room, don't they, when they're playing cards and that?
Yeah.
In fact, in one of the previous episodes, didn't she retrieve some cigars from her apartment?
Yeah, she did.
Yeah. Starbuck loves a good cigar. I wonder if the Cuban.
Well, Cuba doesn't exist yet, right?
No, that's true. It doesn't spoiler. Exist in this time frame. Spoiler. Okay, the Caprica version of Cuba, then. There you go.
There you go. There must be some
thing like that. Well, let's be honest. Someone on Caprica invented a Hummer. So, you know, maybe there's a Cuba as well. But yeah, and I do like the fact that you have got people choosing the side, and the irony of the person she turns to for help is the person who's trying to bring her down anyway, which is Tom Zarek.
Well, we've said before, he's wanting to be in charge. He's wanting a government which will do what it needs to, which he never, to be honest, thought she was the right person. But as things develop, that changes. Now, of course, the one thing, as we've mentioned before, when it comes to Tom Zarek, is that he does not want the military in charge. He would much rather Rosalind be in charge. He knows he won't be, but he'd much rather her be in charge, especially more than Ty.
Yeah.
It's sort of that pragmatism that, you know, he'll do whatever he needs to do and change whatever views he needs to change in order to get done what he thinks should be done.
Yeah.
Now, did you notice the homage to the original series on Cloud Nine?
I don't think I did. I'd be the last person to notice because I have never seen the original series.
Yeah. When she greets Tom Sarek, who, as we know, in the original series was Apollo, the shuttle that she gets off as the walking over is in the background is a shuttle from the original series.
Oh, that's right. I did see that one.
I didn't actually notice that.
Yeah, that shuttle actually gets used a couple more times, I think, this season.
Yeah. I just thought it was wonderful how they very, very subtly did it, because this is the original Apollo, and this is a shuttle from his show.
I should tell my Richard Hatch story real quick. So I went to Star Trek Las Vegas in 2014, and Richard Hatch was there, because, of course, he's doing the fan film Axanar, and so he was signing autographs, and you know, one of the first days of the convention, I went to the Starbucks because I'm just addicted to Starbucks, and the guy in front of me in the line turns around and it's Richard Hatch, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, this is like my first moment of, oh my god, I'm actually at this convention where all these celebrities are around, and I'm in, you know, the line at Starbucks with Tom Zarek. But I figured, you know, they probably, you know, they spend all day talking to fans. You know, when he's in line at Starbucks, he probably wants to be left alone. So I, you know, smiled, nodded, and went about my order.
He probably appreciated that, to be honest.
It's one of those weird things where you're sort of in that confined space with all of these people, you know, and you're riding the elevator with Michelle Nichols, and, you know, you're seeing the guys from Enterprise walk past you in the lobby and things like that. So yeah, I figure they probably appreciate not being mobbed when they're outside the convention itself.
Yeah, I do know someone who went to a convention in Melbourne in Australia, and they got into the lift to go back to their room, and in the lift was a member of the Deep Space Nine cast. And it was one of them moments where they're thinking, do I or don't I say something? But, you know, I can't say I've ever been in that situation, so I wouldn't know.
It was a first for me, that's for sure.
Yeah, although I do like the fact that he was in Starbucks. There you go. He didn't send
PA. Apollo was in a Starbucks.
Yeah, and it's also nice that he got his own coffee.
Yeah, not everybody has assistants for that sort of thing.
No. Well, no, but I mean, at a convention, they normally have runners and that, don't they, for them, so.
Well, I was trying to remember when exactly it was. I didn't know if it was before the main convention hall opened in the morning or something like that.
Yeah, because, I mean, Steve and I, we had Star Trek London not long ago, and when all the stars come out, they all had a little helper next to them all the time.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I remember when I was there. Of course, Tim Russ finished his set, and I thought, oh, because he was basically walking past me. But I didn't even bother trying to talk to him because so many people were on him trying to get selfies and everything else. And I thought, he's just finished doing a set because his band was playing. Just let the man have a drink. So,
oh, no, yeah.
I didn't even bother trying to ask a question, shake his hand, or anything else like that because I just thought, he deserves to just go get a drink. Just let him walk to the bar, please.
No kidding. I had his sister asked me for directions. It was pretty funny. I was just walking down towards the convention hall, and this lady who was walking next to me said, hey, can you tell me where such and such restaurant is? And she says, and so I directed her and said, oh, thanks. My brother played Tuvok. I'm just meeting him here for lunch.
Oh, my God.
I'm like, that's pretty cool.
What's he say? I never heard of the guy.
But anyway.
Who's Tuvok?
That wouldn't fly because I had, you know, a Star Trek t-shirt on, so.
Oh, why not? Yeah, that wouldn't work. Wouldn't work. Anyway, yeah. Battlestar.
Yes. Back to Battlestar. So we're the president's escaped. Tom Zarek's helping. Billy stays on the ship. Billy stays on Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, because he said he won't be part of something that could ignite a civil war.
Now, before we get on to what's been happening on Caprica, because we've sort of almost covered everything that's been going on with Galactica.
Well, you've got to do the Lee Harvey Oswald moment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's... Callie just walks right up and shoots Boomer as they're taking her through the hall in chains. It's a great moment, which... And I know this for a fact because I listened to the commentary, is totally modeled on the, you know, the thing where Jack Ruby shot Lee Harvey Oswald in a parking garage.
Yeah. I did get it on my notes because it was on the... Aaron Douglas, that's it, said they totally modeled it on that. Totally.
But what I liked was the fact that you can hear shouts in the background that just said, oh no, they've shot Boomer, sort of thing. So,
yeah, it's the little things that make that scene a lot. I mean, obviously, as soon as you see it, you get the historical reference. But it's the little things that amplify all that.
Well, it's just the fact that they're all shouting at her because of what she'd done. But yet, still, as soon as she was shot, their first reaction was, oh no, they have shot her. Which, of course, a lot of people have known her for a long time, sort of thing. And it was just good that, as you said, the little things, that they had that sort of reaction in.
So even though they're still dealing with the fact that she's a Cylon and this, you know, sudden revelation and she shot the old man, you know, there's still that history that they have.
Yeah.
Which, of course, you really feel when she dies in the Chief's arms.
Yeah, and it does get referenced in the next episode, which obviously we'll cover at the time, but it does get referenced about, you know, we all knew her. So there's like this double-edged sword to the whole thing.
Well, on the topic of things the Chief had said and notes, one of my notes was, I think this was the first time that we hear the name Pegasus. Because the Chief, when he's being sort of accused of being a Cylon, he's saying, I served aboard this ship, this ship, and this ship. And that's the first time I remember hearing the name Pegasus.
That's right, he does say Pegasus, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, yeah.
But I can't remember when Pegasus comes in, whether or not the chief knows any of that crew.
I don't think it's ever said. I can't remember off the top of my head if anyone does, but I don't think so.
Because it's, you'd think, because there would have been a lot of long-term people on that ship, and especially as it is a newer ship as well, that he would have known people in it. But especially with everything that transpires, it made me think, but of course, it then made me start thinking, is that the same Pegasus? Because of course, that is a newer ship. About whether or not that was an older ship which got decommissioned and another ship took its place, because you know how ship names get reused in the military. So when one's decommissioned, you'll usually get another one named after that one. So it made me think, did he actually serve on the Pegasus we see later on, or was it a different one?
I personally took it as it was a different one, based on the fact that Galactica is one of the older generation.
Yeah.
So I took it as a different one, and basically got reassigned when that one, because they always take a ship out of commission and then replace it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they don't build the ship that's going to have the same name. It's not built while the other one's still in service.
Exactly. So that's what made me start thinking about whether it would have been a different Pegasus in the first place, because the Chief's been part of Galactica for quite a while, because he's one of the longer serving members of the crew.
Yeah, I mean, you take Enterprise, I mean, Grogan's probably in a better position to answer this than me and you, but you take Enterprise, was they building the ship that's now called Enterprise before they decommissioned the carrier?
Sometimes they, you know, they'll have ship building takes a long time, you know, like 18 months, things like, you know, it takes a long time. So you're going to have these, the hull laid down, you're going to have the ship built before a long time, probably before you decide what it's actually going to be. So, you know, you got a ship in the shipyard, you decide, okay, the Enterprise is old, we're going to decommission it. So we're going to make that one that we're already building the new Enterprise. And in fact, you know, during the war, World War II, when we had carriers sunk, they would several times they took a ship that already had a name that was in the shipyards and said, okay, that's the new Hornet or whatever.
Yeah, because it's a symbol. Yeah. That makes sense.
And in fact, there is an example of that on Star Trek Deep Space Nine. When the Defiant gets destroyed, they take a ship that was being built, and I believe it was supposed to be the Sao Paulo. And
yeah,
they
that's right.
Renamed it the Defiant and gave it to Sisko.
Yeah, they get this special dispensation to rename it Defiant. Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, there you go. It's like, well, but there is some.
I think that's the only one that's actually mentioned on screen. I think there's the implication that in Star Trek IV, you know, in Star Trek III the Enterprise gets destroyed, in Star Trek IV they get a new Enterprise, and I think the implication is that was going to be some other ship, and it was renamed the Enterprise.
Yeah, well, there is the hint that the Enterprise was going to be decommissioned because it was 20 years old. So there is the hint that they would have been, obviously.
Which, that's one of those ones where there was no way it could only be 20 years old.
Yeah. Didn't you retrofit this as a promotion picture?
Yeah.
It should have been at least 30 to 40 years old, but that's another...
That's another show.
That's a goof for another podcast.
Yeah.
We'll hand that over to the Dribbles and Ecstasy guys.
Yeah. There you go.
Pass
the memo on.
Down on Caprica.
Back to Caprica.
Yeah. This is where we first...
Oh, hang on. Before you go to Caprica, I just want to say one thing. The President makes a point about the press having a field day. Right? I still have an awful lot of problems with these tiny little press corps that seem to have an awful lot of sway in a fleet of less than 50,000 people. Just wanted to say that.
Well, they've got nothing else to listen to apart from the press.
Yeah. And the count. Did you get the count? 47,861. There you go.
Yeah, it's down one, I think it was, for this
Yeah,
one.
It's going to be a day more, a lot more after this, because they killed four. But there you go. Sorry, Steve, carry on.
But yeah, we head down to Caprica, actually quite early on, in the episode, where you actually get to see other humans on Caprica for the first time since, well, they rescued people.
Yeah. Was it May or did Pyramid look boring?
It's always looked boring.
It looked too small to have like a huge team like they apparently have.
Yeah, I did think that. I mean, one-on-one.
Maybe when they play it on pro professionally, you know, maybe it's a bigger court.
Well, no, they said it was the correct size and everything else. But whether or not people get rotated or something else like that, we never truly know. You only ever see a handful of people on the court at a time. So it could be that so many people are on there for a small amount of time before being like tagged in or something.
Yeah. And I can't remember how much they actually show it in the show, Kevin.
I can't remember. But I mean, when I was playing one-on-one, I was thinking, man, that game would get boring fast.
Yeah.
Well, most games like that are boring to me, but...
Yeah, well, yeah, there is that, yeah. I think they tried to do, elements of baseball and elements of basketball and tried to amalgamate some sports into, like, this. It's like in Star Trek when you get Ambu Jiu-Jitsu. It's that type of thing. But yeah, it didn't work. Although I did like the fact that Anders did say most of what we do we've learned from movies. I thought that was funny.
That's a great line. Because, I mean, how realistic is that? I mean, you have this... You know, they're not combat soldiers. You know, it'd be like... You know, the Harlem Globetrotters are the resistance. You know, they're not going to have shotguns before. They're, you know, they're just going to be doing what they've seen on Die Hard.
Here's what I like is, of course, you've got, on the surface, you've got Kara and got Thrace and...
Hilo.
Hilo. Oh, I'm awful for names today. But yeah, Starbuck and Hilo, they're trying to figure out where to go. They're looking at a map and... It's just like, do you hear that? Because they're not exactly quiet. And you got to wonder how they managed to win attacks on the Cylons, given how much noise they made.
Maybe the Cylons are letting him win.
But that's the thing I don't know with their base of operations. The Cylons don't patrol here. Why?
Well, it looked like it was a very old school that had been closed down for a long time. So, plus we already know that the Cylons are concentrating on rebuilding the cities. So I would probably expect that they stopped patrolling lots of these places out in the sticks to concentrate their efforts into these things. Because they're not really worried too much about these groups of people because they can take care of them at any point, really.
Yeah, and there is also the belief that basically all the humans are dead.
Yeah. But I like the bit where they're going, how do we know you're not a Cylon sort of thing when they have each other at gunpoint?
Yeah, but the other thing with this and all these, though, is if you're any military aspect, if you're getting hit in a certain area, then you know that the people hitting you are in that area. So if that's their base of operations, they would be hitting within a radius of there. So from a military point of view, you draw the circle around where you're getting hit, and then you work inwards.
Well, not necessarily. We don't know what transport they have had access to.
They got Hummers.
Yeah, but whether they've got access to fuel all the time, but they could have driven hundreds of miles before attacking a target. So it's not always that it could be local.
Well, from what they say about the heavy radar, they work in, because it comes regular as clockwork, he said. So you would assume that...
Well, we're actually on to the next episode now.
Yeah, sorry, jumping ahead. But that reference tells you that they operate in a certain area because there's familiarity with what the Cylons are doing.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean that the Cylons also, would be able to find them easily.
We don't see anything of the Cylons, you know, what they plan, what they're thinking. And we start to get glimpses of what they're doing on New Caprica in the next episode.
Yes, yes.
But it's my thought that they're actually letting these guys live for some purpose.
Well, yeah, there is. We do know that they do like to, like, basically do the old mouse in a maze with humans. So it could be part of that.
Yeah.
It's a science experiment.
Yeah. And I also did like the fact that they have kept Starbuck covered in scratches and bruises, and she hasn't miraculously healed overnight.
No, only Hilo miraculously heals.
Yeah. That's because he's had sex with a Cylon.
So the healing power is like an STD.
Yeah. Basically, that's what it is, yeah. The transfer of fluid heals you.
Oh dear.
Although that does get blown out the window in the next episode. But still. What else was I going to say? I was just, while you were talking today, I did some Googling. And it's...
You mean the thing that you said you don't do?
Yeah, the thing that I said I don't do.
Which website did you end up on?
fuck, I can't give my sources away. But it does
actually
say...
We won't go there.
It does actually say that there's... the line of thinking from the production type of view was there was 12 in total, so there's 8 Cylons left. So they've killed Shelley, they've killed Leo, they've killed Aaron, and now they've killed Boomer, so that leaves 8 more.
So she basically just said what they already knew anyway, although yeah. She doesn't know that they know.
Yeah, basically.
But they may have, over the remaining season, I would say, they probably don't show exactly 8 in the fleet.
No, but that would be 8 models in the fleet, not 8.
Yeah. And the Columbia and the Atlanta and the Pegasus that Tyrol reference are all names that have a reference to production crew in relation to royal ships. So that's an interesting point. So they could have done like Stargate and when Colonel O'Neill wanted to call the ship the Enterprise.
I love that line with Kars just saying, we cannot call it the Enterprise. Why?
Yeah, why?
Because.
The Prometheus is a Greek tragedy.
It's a tragedy.
Yeah.
I was actually just watching that the other day.
Yeah. Who names their ship after a Greek tragedy? How's that going to inspire you?
That is exactly what I tweeted the other day, too, because in Star Trek Online, they just named a ship class the Icarus, and I'm like thinking, that doesn't end well.
Yeah,
you need to stop naming things things Icarus.
Yeah, especially now that they've redone the maps, so when you fly up to a solar system, you're part next to the sun. Don't put your ship called Icarus next to the sun.
And I know it's cool and everything to name your ships after Greeks and Roman mythology things, but those usually have really nasty endings.
Yeah, actually my ship's the USS Agamemnon. So
he came to a good end.
He came to a good end, yeah. And he was a good general. So says a lot about my tactics.
You seem to know more about Taxis than the rest of us, though. You knew about how to search for a resistance group.
Yeah, I've read Sun Tzu. Does that count? Yeah, well. I was going to join the military, so there you go. I did get accepted to Sandburst. Failed the medical in the end, but there you go. Passed all the other things else.
Well, you are not to be trifled with, then. Except medically.
Except medically.
unlike most other Americans, I know what Sandhurst is.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I should clarify that. Sandhurst is basically West Point in America.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there you go. So you know what West Point is.
Military officers. Yeah.
Yeah, basically. So yeah, I did all the exams and everything with that in mind. My world came crashing down. But there you go.
I had a decision to make. I'd done everything apart from the physical, and I'd even got the train tickets through for my physical to go into the army. And at the last moment, I decided it'd be computing that I'd go into. So,
yeah, I actually took the physical 3 times.
I got my fitness up so I could pass it. Because I was always a tall, big bloke, I just hadn't got the upper strength to lift it all because of the weight that I was. So although I wasn't fat, I was just big and heavy. So I just had to build that up, and I'd actually got to that level that was required. But yeah, my allergies were getting, and because I've got eczema, it was just getting so much worse that I thought, yeah, it's not fair on other people if I go out into the field and all I do is sneeze. So yeah, it's just like, no. Best if I don't put myself into that sort of position. And given how much worse it got, that was probably a good choice.
Yeah.
We all end up in different places from where we might have thought.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Very super.
Which is kind of the premise of Battlestar Galactica when you think about it.
Yeah.
None of these people thought they were going to be on a ragtag fleet running for their lives in the apocalypse.
No. Although, seeing as we're military bent, I did notice that there was a British Army rifle in this episode, which is...
There's quite a variety of small arms that you see among the resistance fighters.
Which, yeah, I thought was good, because they've said they've done lots of raids to get arms and everything else. So it shows what it is they've been doing. They've got weapons from anywhere and everywhere. So I thought it was good that it's not all one weapon sort of thing. You're not just seeing everyone with P90s and stuff like that.
No, but I did think it was funny how everyone shoots them when it was a bit like the A-Team. Everyone was throwing rounds everywhere and no one got hurt. But I did think it was funny how Starbuck had to go at them for being bad shots where she didn't actually manage to hit any of them either.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, they're all undercover. So... But, yeah.
Yeah, and
it's the same with all these TV shows.
Or just trying to pin them down a little bit so they can get undercover themselves, I think.
Yeah, but even the guy with
the other guys are just bad shot.
Yeah, but the one guy had a massive hunting rifle with a massive scope on, and he still couldn't hit them.
Well, it doesn't mean he knew how to use it.
Yeah. No.
So they even say...
I was rubbish at target shooting, too, so...
Yeah, maybe it's like when you give the person who's the worst shot the shotgun, so all he has to do is point.
But no, even Starbuck remarks on how bad they are at shooting and moving and everything.
Yeah. But yeah, great. I think we've basically ripped Resistance to pieces.
You know, it's not a bad episode. It's just, I think these two episodes that we're recording today, this one and for the next episode, is it suffers a little bit from a slowdown after the first three or four episodes are great, and then it kind of loses momentum a little bit.
I think it loses momentum in some aspects, but I also think it's because they're like having a reset and then they're laying threads for other stuff later.
Yeah, you always get these episodes where it's setting up the storylines, and especially in this one, you're introducing the people from the Resistance and mm-hmm. the Absolutely. Caprica Buccaneers and stuff like that. So it's doing a lot of setting up, and as Colin said, it's doing a reset. You've just had sort of Adama, who's just been shot, so it's setting up Ty's position. So it's creating all these storylines, which is what then the next several episodes are based on, primarily.
Yeah, and I certainly don't blame them for doing that. It happened this way on this last season of The Walking Dead. I mean, the first three episodes were at this, you know, huge amount of tension, and they were great, and they were moving along and really cracking pace, and then it just a complete slowdown after that as they set up new things. And I don't know, it can be tough a little bit sometimes because those episodes don't end up being as good as the first few. And it feels like a letdown, even if they're all right.
Yeah, it depends on what you're looking for in an episode. If it's always going to be the action and things like that, but on a story perspective, those slow episodes usually give you so much and you always end up with so many questions at the end of it. There's just like, oh, what's going to happen here, here, and here? And these are the episodes where you end up talking to your friends more at the end of the episode, not just like, oh, did you see this happen and this happen? It's like, oh, and then you end up talking for hours about the story and the characters, and you end up talking a lot more about these slow episodes than you actually usually even notice.
Definitely more than about the action-y episodes. So you're like, oh, hey, that cool fight scene, and then you're done. And this
exactly.
one, it's like, oh, man, I have so many questions.
Exactly, because it's just like, oh, well, what's going to happen to Roslyn now she's on the run? what's actually going to happen to Adama. We should
mention, as we wind down our episode of the podcast here, the great scene at the end of the episode where Adama's back. Shows up at the door of Colonel Ty's room there and says, "What's been happening on my ship?"
And then he forgot about that, yeah. But of course, he comes in just as Ellen Ty's sort of cutting him down, saying, sort of, "You should be doing this, this, and this, and not trying to do what Bill does." And it's almost like you're doing something at school that you shouldn't be, and the teacher walks in. It's just like,
"Speak of the devil, and he shall appear."
"How much of that did you hear?" And just like, "Can I be left alone?" It's just like, "Yeah, sure." Just like, "Ow."
Well, I'm sure there's a member of the crew that she hasn't been intimate with yet.
She could find a way to kill an hour or two.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's Resistance, folks. I actually like it. I mean, you know, yeah, as you said, it was a bit slow, but it was basically a reset. But I did actually like it, apart from Pyramid Game, which I just thought was dumb. But there you go.
Yeah, well, because of course, she even says, "Oh, I see, good to know that this was a high priority of the Resistance to get a 2-scale replica of the court in place." And he's like, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was the other thing I forgot to mention. She said that she nearly made the pros if it wasn't for her knee. So, but we've also demonstrated in another episode that your knee needs to be able to take 5 Gs. So what type of pressure is being put on your knee in a game of Pyramid that exceeds 5 Gs?
Well,
maybe
the thing is,
the other knee was the
other
knee. The problem with it.
Well, she didn't say what problem she had. She could have had a problem with her knees, which has since been rectified, but at the time of trying to get into the professionals and the opportunity to do that passed because of an injury or something. You know how if you suffer from an injury but yet there's a scouting on that day, you don't play, you don't get picked, sort of thing. So I took it that was the reason she didn't go in. She had a problem with her knee, she didn't get picked, she went into the armed services.
Yeah, that makes sense. So anyway, that's Resistance, folks. So Drogan, where can people find you on the internet?
Best place to find me is on Twitter. The at handle is at Drogyn, Drogyn 1701.
And if you're a Star Trek Online fan, check out his podcast.
Yes, the Foundry Roundtable. We are coming up on our 100th episode, which will probably be out by the time anybody hears this. But it's been a great ride, and we're looking forward to another 100.
Congratulations. Not many podcasts make 100, so that's a major milestone.
Yeah.
So, Steve, where can I find you? Actually, where can't they find you? That'd be quicker.
Can't think of anyway. They can get me on all the social networks at Midnight Shadow 7. That's Knight spelt N-I-T-E and with the number 7. And yeah, I'm on several Star Trek and Star Trek Online podcasts. So just look them up.
When you're not moonlighting on the My Little Pony podcast, right?
Of course.
You're such a podcast whore.
So, I like to get around.
Yeah. And me, folks, you can find me on COLMH01 on Google and Twitter. And, of course, you're listening to this podcast, obviously, which is what you're hearing our voices. But we would appreciate it if you do listen to it on iTunes or Stitcher, if you could leave a nice little review, because it helps us show up in the ratings. Especially the 5-star ones on iTunes, because basically you get highlighted, and then the more we get highlighted, the more listeners we get, and so on and so forth. So if you could go to your resident iTunes in whatever country you're in, or Stitcher, whatever country you're in, and leave us a review, we very much appreciate it. Also, check out the Hollow Sweet Media website for all the other podcasts that are on the network, and check them out. Everything is on there. There's Star Wars, Star Trek, Star Trek Online, Battlestar Galactica, obviously, which is this one. So do check out the Hollow Sweet Media Network. And I would also like to say a personal thank you to everyone who, because I know some of them do listen to this show, who nominated Melodic Trek for the Parsec Awards, which is now a Parsec nominated podcast. So thank you very much for doing that to everyone involved. So until next week, when we are doing The Farm, or in our case, in 10 minutes time, but from your point of view, 2 weeks time, thanks for listening, thanks for downloading, and we'll speak to you soon.
Take care, everyone.
See you later.